Action skill 3C is called releasing. This is the act of releasing occluded positions by quickly lowering the jaw after pressure builds. Now, the occluded positions, of course, are those positions he learned by producing the vibratory sounds that were then occluded. So he has the ability to produce a B because he's already learned to vibrate with his lips and to close off that vibration. Now, once that position is held, he can do a couple things. He can vibrate again, or he can lower his jaw and let that position go. And when he does so, we hear a B-like sound. The same thing occurs with D. He produces a lingua labial vibratory sound. He closes it, and then he releases it. And it's a very gross but yet a D-like sound. Same thing occurs at the velum, and at the glottis. I'm sure you've had clients whose only sound has been that is the glottal stop produced with a neutral vowel following, and it's so easy, you don't have to move your mouth at all to produce that sound. So it does become a predominant sound amongst children who have no oral movement whatsoever. Now, these four sounds, B, D, G, and the glottal stop, are highly functional sounds for the children, and they're the first stop consonants to emerge. They're usually produced with a neutral vowel at first, ba, the schwa. But if the child can take that occluded position and then release it into the vowels he's already learned, remembering that he's learned E, U, A, and O, then he can produce B, Boo, Ba, and Bo. Now, as a young child, and remember, we're talking about what infants are doing, they don't say B, Boo, Ba, and Bo. They say B, Boo, Ba, Bo. Those vowels are usually weak, they're short, they're not really strong enough yet. Remember, we're still talking about a child of 4 to 6 months of age. A six-month-old baby will often be heard to produce syllables like that. Ba, 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 bo, bo, bo. But it doesn't sound like the mature production of ba or bo. But the vowel is distinct nonetheless, and this is the most critical element of the single syllable that's first learned at this time. A consonant produced before an intelligible and distinct and differentiated vowel is what makes for different words. A child who's producing ba for ball, ba for baby, ba for bye-bye, ba for boo, ba for book, ba for any B word, is going to be very unintelligible, because when he says ba, you don't know whether he's talking about the banana, the boat, the baby, or bye-bye. You can look at context and understand it better, but it's going to be very limited in terms of who he can talk to and what he can talk about. But if he can be taught to release those consonant sounds into the vowels he has already learned, hopefully, then he's got a variety of sounds. He's got B, Boo, Ba, and Bo. B can be used for the letter B. It can be used for the little insect, the B. Boo can be used for a ghost, Boo. Or Boo can be for boot, or Boo can be for book, because it's a close. Ba can be for bottle, or bye-bye. Bo can be for boat, and so forth. So it is critical during this time that when the child is gaining these consonants, that we not shift gears and begin to focus on consonants only. We need to continue strong focus on the vowels. And when we do so, we can end up with a huge number of words compared to the words he could do with just those consonants. Of all the things that I watch in therapy as I talk to other therapists and watch them do therapy nationwide is this mistake of focusing on consonants once they begin to emerge. With a severely apraxic child and with a dysarthric child as well, we need to continue our strong focus on the vowels. And we began that during the very first stage, during preparing. Remember, it was action skill 1D, during which the child learned basic oral postures, which taught him those vowels. Children with severe oral motor dysfunction often will skip this step of learning those distinct vowels, and they will jump ahead, if you will, to these consonants, and if they have therapists and teachers and parents and so forth focusing on the consonants, the child will continue to develop expressive speech without the intelligibility that can be gained by connecting these consonants to those intelligible and differentiated vowels. So I'm belaboring this point because to me it is the most critical component of intelligibility from this point forward. If a child moves into a large vocabulary without a rich assortment of vowels, he will be highly unintelligible. If he moves into two-word combinations under the same conditions, he will continue to be highly unintelligible. And if he ultimately moves into phrases and sentences without clearly differentiated vowels, he will be very unintelligible because by that point he will be talking on a wide assortment of topics and we won't have any idea what he's talking about. So we need those vowels clear and crisp and correct starting from this point forward. In my therapy, I honor the vowel and dishonor or ignore the consonant during this phase. I want to see him learning B, I want to see him learning D, I want to see him learning G, but I don't care which one he uses when he's producing a word. What I care about is the vowel. So, for example, let's say my office mate's name is D, and let's say the child produces her name as B. I'm going to reward him for that production because the vowel is correct. If he produces her name as duh, I'm not going to reward that because duh doesn't sound like D. B sounds more like D than duh sounds like D. So let's say D walks into the office and little Matthew says, duh, duh. I'm going to say, oh, no, no, that's D, E, D. And I'm going to pursue that line until he produces her sound with an E. And again, I don't care what consonant comes in front of it. So in other words, during this releasing phase, the child is learning to release these occluded positions, and the result is specific consonants like B, D, and G. But what makes for usefulness of these sounds is what vowel he hooks it up with. Now, if your client is producing these consonants with just the neutral vowel, and you're just getting B, D, and G, that's fine. That's a great place to start. But I would not continue any further along the line of learning consonants until I had backtracked back to that early first stage of learning to posture correctly to get those distinct vowels. Now, with these vowels intact, we can have a wide assortment of words, and you can see them listed on your outline or your handout there. We can use boo, be, and bo, do, 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 de, 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 goo, go. And then the child will also combine this skill with the nasal sounds that he's already learned. And remember, he has learned M, N, and NG. So he can be now producing words like me, may, moo, mo, and ma, knee, nay, new, and no. And many of our children will produce sounds with an initial NG sound, although in English, no words start with NG. So we have no sample words that we can use for that. However, your child may be producing no, for example, as no. And again, he should be rewarded for that because he is now producing a consonant and vowel sequence. Children will use this basic consonant-vowel combination in typical development, in even complex words and phrases. For example, in your outline there, you see the word sugar cookies, which was pronounced by one child as guh. Now he's already gone through speechifying, so it sounds like a word, it sounds like the phrase. He can prolong the sound, he can intone it, he can pulse it. So it's sounding like the word sugar cookies, but when you look at the phonetics of it and the phonology of it, he's producing only a consonant and a vowel, guh. But if you're a family together and you're in the middle of making sugar cookies and everybody around is saying sugar cookies, and the child pipes up and says, guh, you can take it that that's what he said, even though it's very far from the mark. Another example is the final one there, a phrase such as, there he is, pronounced day. And I'm sure you will hear many of these in your clients. Notice that the ability to take this basic consonant-vowel combination and use it for complex words, multisyllabic words, and use it for phrases requires the ability to prolong that sound. And thinking back again to stage one, Prolonging is our second sound, or our second action skill, and that points to the importance of that. If a child has reached this level and he's trying to say a phrase like, there he is, without the ability to prolong, he's going to say, "Deh," which people around him are not necessarily going to recognize at all as the phrase, "there he is." But if he points to a boy and he says, "Deh," you've got it. You know that that's what he's done. So all of the skills, I hope you're seeing by now as we march through these levels, that every skill adds a critical element of your child's ability to learn connected speech. Prolonging this idea about prolongation one more time, you'll notice with many children who even are at a phrase level, they don't prolong sound within the single word. So they might produce the phrase, "there he is," as de-i-i, de-i-i. Can you hear he's got each syllable there? De-i-i. He's got enough of the sound to make it recognizable. De-i-i. But his utterances are so short. Each single syllable is so short, it doesn't allow for the addition of the intonation and especially the final consonants in there and the differentiated vowels that will make him more intelligible. So by this point, even though we're moving into consonants, it is really important that we stop at this point and take an inventory of what are the skills during the preparing stage and during the speechifying stage which the child is or is not using, which he then can impose on these single syllables that he's using. This is a mistake that many therapists make, and I did it for years until I understood this idea. I found myself modeling the word, for example, ball as buh, buh, and I encourage children to do that, and I think that that is a big mistake for them. In terms of therapy at this level, therefore, we're going to continue all our voice and airflow stimulation activities that we've talked about so far. We're going to continue the horns and the whistles and the kazoos and the harmonicas and so forth. Again, the reason being we're encouraging deeper inhalation and longer and more controlled prolongation. I don't care if a child can produce a sound with a particular whistle or horn or not. What I'm looking for is how much control does he have over inhaling? How much control does he have over exhaling? We're going to continue our work on the occlusion positions because those are the positions that result in the consonants we're talking about. And we're going to initiate work to lower the jaw. Now, in this program, we're not talking specifically about oral motor stimulation techniques. You can refer to my older material for that or other material that is out now. But basically, we want that jaw to move. And this is where we start looking closely at kids' jaws to see how much they are moving. What you may find is that your client has the jaw in a lowered position much of the time, and it doesn't move much from that position. That is typical of children with low tone who have their mouths hanging open much of the time. Or is the child's jaw high and fixed in position, and perhaps his whole face is in a tightly smiled position? That often occurs in children who are hypertonic. The muscles in the oral area are held too tightly, and they look like they're smiling all the time, which is nice, but it results in a jaw that barely moves. And a jaw that barely moves, either because it's stuck high or it's stuck low, is a jaw that will not be conducive to the development of the consonants and vowels that we've been talking about. So we want to get that jaw to move, and we want to do it through feeding activities. We want to do it through chewing activities. Many therapists now are using those chewy tubes that are available. Those are a great source. But make sure when he's eating that he's getting that mouth open and closed, open and closed. And make sure he's chewing on rubbery objects. Make sure he's making faces in the mirror with the jaw up and the jaw down and so forth. And then next we want to teach the concept of building up interoral air pressure. Again, we started that in the prior section, and we talked about using balls and stuffed animals and pillows and so forth to continue to build up that idea. And the glottal release, I have that marked separately there because with the glottal release, that is the one that does not require any jaw movement, and that's one of the reasons why it's so easy and so many kids get stuck with that sound. We want to practice the glottal release, but we don't want to over-practice it. It is a sound that many children can get stuck with for a long period of time, and we don't want to see that happen. Remember, any sound to which we pay attention will increase in its frequency. And that's a basic principle of therapy and teaching that we want to keep in mind throughout this whole program. Whatever we pay attention to, that's what appears. And whatever we ignore, that's what eventually fades out from the child's repertoire. So the glottal release is something we may want to play with for a little while, but then we want to begin to ignore it as we encourage more oral sound.